Welcome back to Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kaushi. Moving on to future affairs, today we're looking at the U.S. debt ceiling crisis and global economy impacts. Now, the United States, the world's largest economy, faces its first ever default, which could result in global financial chaos. Now, on 19 January 2023, the U.S. hit its debt ceiling, leading to a debt ceiling crisis, which is part of an ongoing political debate within Congress about federal government spending and national debt that the U.S. government accrues. Now, the U.S. Treasury Department, via Secretary Janet Yellen, has said the government could run out of money to pay its financial obligations by 1st of June if lawmakers fail to agree on a deal to raise current limits on government spending. So what are the implications for global economies and also domestically, with the U.S. being Malaysia's third largest trading partner? Well, joining me online now to discuss exactly this, I have the pleasure of being joined by Audrey Goh, Head of Asset Allocation and Thematic Strategy with Standard Chartered Wealth Management Group, as well as Dr. Teo Wing Leong, Head of School of Economics, University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Audrey, Dr. Teo, thanks so much for joining me online. How are both of you doing this morning?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Fantastic. Audrey, if I could start off by asking you, so nearing a breach of the U.S. debt ceiling this X date could cause significant disruptions to U.S. financial markets, damage economic conditions faced by households and businesses. What are the public policy options available in the U.S. and also perhaps Malaysia to buffer this kind of an impact?
I think it's important to note that even when the X date is being reached, a default does not happen right away, because there are avenues of recourse available to the U.S. government. For example, the Treasury may choose to prioritize debt payment and basically continue to pay bondholders, but withhold payment to other bills, for example, owned to individuals or to companies. And obviously, they can also choose to cut back on some spending as well as government shutdown. That will also allow them to buy some time to last the Treasury for a couple of weeks or even months while negotiation continue to take place between both parties to reach an agreement. Obviously, there is also one more option, which is also available to the U.S. government, where he can choose to unilaterally trigger the 14th Amendment, which is the idea is that the validity of the U.S. debt shall not be questioned, and therefore raising the U.S. debt ceiling unilaterally on its own. Obviously, that will also come with risk, but having said that, there are options that's available to the U.S. authorities to actually mitigate a potential fallout from a default situation.
Very interesting insights over there. Thank you so much, Audrey. And Dr. Teo, moving on to you. What are, of course, the public policy options available in the U.S. and also Malaysia to buffer this impact, considering that this is all playing rather fast and loose with the American financial system and also credit worthiness?
Well, I think for the moment, what is troubling the financial market is the possibility of the U.S. default. It has not happened yet, but because all sides knows that if it really happens, it could bring huge impact to both the financial market and to the economy. For example, if there is a protracted default by the U.S. government, the stock market can plummet by as much as 45%, and the GDP can decline by as much as 8 or 9%. So that has huge impact, not only for the United States, and we expect that can also affect the global economy as well. Now, of course, given such a big impact to the U.S. economy and also the global economy, the rational thing would be to expect that the two sides will eventually come to term and decide to raise the debt ceiling. So at the moment, I would say that the best thing that they can do is to show to the world that they are actually making progress towards reaching that agreement, even if they have not reached an agreement yet, but at least they need to show that they are actually willing to negotiate and willing to reach an agreement.
Clearly, and it has been a very tense past 2 weeks in particular. And moving along from there, though, now market stress indicators are correlated with debt ceiling tensions. They are worsening, however, which is leading to a little bit of increased volatility in equity, corporate bond markets, and inhibiting firms' ability to finance themselves. What are broader fallouts beyond the U.S. economy, in your perspective first, Audrey?
Well, it depends on how prolonged this debt ceiling discussion will be. Obviously, the longer it is, the more uncertainty there will be in the market and the more risk-averse people will be. Because after all, the U.S. government is a major employer in the U.S. economy as well. So people may cut back on spending or rather ration out their spending while waiting for this saga to get over. And against that backdrop, actually, if that were to be prolonged, then I wouldn't be surprised if investors were to demand greater premium or greater yield, for example, to compensate for the higher risk that they're taking. So if you look at the previous debt ceiling episode back in 2011, at a point in time, big investors basically demanded higher bond yields, whether is it coming from emerging market bonds or even high yield bonds, for example, leading to credit risk heightening and credit spreads widening. So that impacted the bond investors quite significantly. And also, let's not also forget equity markets as well, where there was also downside, where it also fell to the downside on the back of this debt ceiling issue. And I think a greater probably question is how might that impact global stability? Because today, if you look at the treasury bonds on their own, they are widely used as collateral throughout the financial system. So so how might other financial players, for example, react to a potential fallout or default by the US is yet to be known, because the US have never defaulted so far historically. But having with that in mind, I think the markets will be quite cautious to see how this entire episode plays out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well observed. Definitely looking forward to how the entire episode will be playing out. And Dr. Teo, then coming back to the fact that clearly U.S. sovereign bonds are the bedrock of the global financial system. So in your perspective, what will be some broader fallouts beyond the U.S. economy, perhaps particularly focusing on Southeast Asia and Malaysia by proxy?
Okay. At the moment, since the default has not happened yet, so the main effect is through the financial market, whereby the investor are getting a bit taking the risk of a position to prepare for the tiny possibility that actually the agreement cannot be reached to raise the debt ceiling. But if really the estate really came, of course, there will be a recession, there will be a stock market plummet in the United States, and that will spread to other developing countries, other economy, including in Southeast Asia. And there will also be an effect through the trade linkages, in the sense that if there's a recession in the United States, of course, all this economy in Southeast Asia that export to the United States will also suffer in terms of export.
Well noted. Now, moving along into, should there be a brief default past the 15th of June, this would in fact impact the Treasury market, translating into over $750 billion in higher federal borrowing costs over the next decade. Will this lower demand for Treasuries and weakening of the dollar's role in the global economy accelerate de-dollarization? Dr. Teo?
Yes, of course. If there is a default, that means that the U.S. government bond is no longer safe. And given that the U.S. government bond has so far been seen as a safe asset, but if there is a first ever default, then it means that from then on, investors can no longer think that U.S. government is still continue to be safe. And of course, they will hold less U.S. government bond, and that will means that the use of dollar in the international financial market will be much less. And of course, that will accelerate the de-dollarization.
Mm-hmm. All right. And Audrey, your thoughts on the same, but also taking into cognition the fact that Bloomberg data has just come out with the cost of insuring U.S. sovereign debt via a one-year CDS contract is now several times more expensive than even for Brazil and Mexico. So where does that place, of course, the American dollar and in its wider role in the global economy vis-a-vis de-dollarization?
Well, I think the de-dollarization theme is a multi-year, multi-decade theme that will continue to play out as we have seen so far, where we have seen a couple of countries, for example, the likes of China, Brazil, or Russia, you know, setting up their own respective payment scheme to mitigate against over-reliance on the dollar. But having said that, I think the near-term dollar is still going to be the dominant reserve currencies. And whether they default or not, I think the main thing is if it is going to be technical default, and if it is viewed to be temporary and there is still a willingness and ability of the US government to pay bondholders for that matter, then probably markets will look beyond that. So there should still be a role for dollar as well as treasury bonds in investors' portfolio, at least from a mid to long-term perspective.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for that, Audrey. Dr. Teo, just wanted to dig a little bit deeper into that. Looking at, of course, the potential of de-dollarization and this accelerating that, what potentials are already available or are already being explored, especially in Southeast Asian markets? Or is this something that will still take markets quite by surprise and cause shocks?
Of course, currently, many of the Southeast Asian countries, including Malaysia, have been starting to use, let's say, renminbi with China. And also, perhaps there will be more talks about using each other currency when it comes to the regional trade. Now, of course, this will be a gradual move, like Audrey mentioned. We won't see that the dollar being replaced immediately, but with all this trouble with the US government default, of course, that will accelerate the process.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for that, Dr. Chiu. And now moving along into a final discussion area whereby a protracted default, though, if it does occur, will cause deep, immediate recessionary conditions for the U.S. as well as the wider global economy, particularly the impact on household borrowings through the private sector as interest rates on bonds, mortgages and credit card interest rates would skyrocket due to risks of an uncertain future. What are some of options available for buffering impacts on, let's say, first, the Malaysian economy? Dr. Teo.
I think the option for Malaysia in this scenario will be quite limited because after all, the problem is in the United States and what we do here cannot really affect what happened in the United States. But for the Malaysian economy, I guess what the government can do will be for the central bank to be prepared to adopt an expansionary monetary policy, for example, to provide liquidity in case there is really a recession or in case there is really a default in the United States. And perhaps the government we also have to adopt an expansionary fiscal policies to support the economy if that is really a default and really recession in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Clearly noted. Audrey, the same question for you. What are some options available for buffering impacts on the Malaysian economy, especially, and perhaps we can cast the net a little bit wider looking at Southeast Asian economies as well, should there be, of course, a protracted standoff about the debt ceiling crisis?
I think a protracted default is probably not our base case because I've mentioned earlier that the US president does have the option to trigger the 14th Amendment to just raise the debt ceiling and to allow the US government to continue borrowing to fund their spending. But if that were to occur, obviously that would be a big hit to economic growth in the US, and that will also impact Malaysia as well as other Southeast Asian markets. So from that perspective, what can authorities in these markets do? I think like Dr. Teo mentioned earlier, potentially look to adopt a more looser monetary policy for one. Obviously, some of the markets with a more domestic focus in their economic orientation will probably be more insulated. For example, Malaysia, you guys do have a relatively strong domestic economy, as well as tourism is also another pillar that may also support the economy further, especially since China has reopened, which basically allows more travelers from the Chinese from China to actually be out of the country to travel and spend. So those are some sort of avenues where you know the authorities can look to buffer some of the economic impact coming up from the US.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Audrey. And also to integrate a perspective that has come up over the past few days itself, the yield on one-month Treasury bills, which mature around the time the U.S. is in danger of breaching its borrowing limit on 1st of June, have risen sharply. It now stands at 5.3%, close to its all-time high. Thoughts on this, Dr. Teo?
Naturally, that reflects the market pricing in the tiny possibility that by the time of like first of June, they cannot reach an agreement on raising the debt ceiling, and so they will have to require a higher return on those bonds.
Mm-hmm. Right, and Audrey, on your side,
I think that will be one of the most important indicators to watch to see if the debt ceiling is any close to being resolved. Because for now, there is increased risk being embedded into the one-month bond, which is why it is yielding much higher compared to maturities longer term out, whether it is on the two-year or even a 10-year front. So take note of that, pay attention to that. If it does recede, it also means that the debt ceiling is probably closer to being agreed upon, and hopefully then it should normalize lower by the time that comes.
That's right, exactly. And hopefully we will know within the next week to come. And I'm trying to close out on this one last point. So the consequences of an outright US default, of course, hardly bear thinking about. And last week, just the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee, groups of banks and asset managers that advises the US government on debt issuance, warned that, quote unquote, any delay in making an interest or principal payment would be an event of seismic proportions, undermining the full faith and credit of the US government. Parting thoughts on this, Dr. Teo?
Definitely, because the role of the US dollar as well as US government bond in the financial market. And so if there is a possibility that US is not able to repay the bond, even just briefly, that can shake the market confidence and also affect the pricing of all the other financial market, all the other financial assets that base their pricing on the US government bond as well.
Sure. And Audrey, your insights on the same?
Well, similar thoughts as Dr. Teo as well. I think what's even more important is what does it take to reach an agreement? Because if it's going to come at expenses of huge budget cuts, then what this means is that the growth outlook for the US will probably take a hit lower, and that's going to impact everyone globally, even after the debt ceiling saga is over. So something to really watch out for as well.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much, Audrey, as well as Dr. Teo, for making time for us on Niaga Spotlight. That has been our segment focusing on the U.S. debt ceiling crisis and how it has been progressing insofar before, of course, the deadline most likely hits, as well as happens on June the 1st. Well, that's all we have for today. This has been Niaga Spotlight with me, Tamina Kausji. We'll see you next Friday with more business analysis and insights. Here's to a productive week ahead.